On this edition of Our Town, I now have the pleasure of speaking with Gary Cargill and Ross Cronert, and we are going to talk Rods and Roadies. Now, Rods and Roadies, this is something that has been around for a while in town, but it has kind of been part of the Chamber's events that they did. What's different now with Rods and Roadies, Gary?
Rods and Roadies now is a nonprofit organization, and we're Rods and Roadies, Inc. We are a 501c3 organization, and we are so Rods and Roadies Car Show is now a charitable event that we are putting it on.
Now, if you can talk about it, if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine too, but what kind of happened there with the separation? Why did you guys break off, or was it something you had to do?
It was more the Chamber. I believe the management or board, I'm not sure, decided that this was one event that they no longer felt like they could support, and maybe for the amount of effort it took, I don't know. But a group of us, upon hearing about that, wanted to try to keep the show going, and so that's where we decided to form a board, apply for, which we received, our nonprofit status. So the show will continue. It will still be down on Bay Street, as it was in the past. The only major difference in the show physically is it will be the Friday afternoon show at the Harbor parking lot, and then Saturday car show on Bay Street. There will be no show on Sunday. So we'll be giving the street back to the merchants and restaurants down there.
So kind of combining it more into a short period
right,
of time.
Right, condense there. It a little bit, have the awards on Saturday and everything. Just keep it more concise.
Well, now that you're a nonprofit, what are some of these proceeds? What are the proceeds going to go towards? Is it toward the club to keep building it, or how's that work?
Well, we want to get a pot going, and we want to get some proceeds in the fund so that we can do more events, like bring in some celebrities, have some events, maybe at the Florence Event Center, musicals and things like that that's car related. In the future. But we also have Transportation Solutions.
Right, we talked about that last month.
We did talk about that last year, or last time. And so this way here, we can, you know, generate some proceeds towards that project as well.
Now, what kind of participation does the group have now? How many cars generally show up for the events?
We have room for about 135. Because of the venue in Old Town. So we can have about 135. So we have to be pretty specific as far as who we let in. And, of course, we've always tried to stay at a high-quality car.
Now, how does it work with sort of like the different car clubs? I mean, because you've got the Roadie Cruisers. Now, how do they play into this as part of the show, or is it just a matter of can be invited? Or
the membership of the Roadie Cruisers, they get involved in quite a few car shows, including this one. A lot of the individual members will volunteer to help, and we need and appreciate that help. But we also get help from other car clubs in the area and other individuals that may be non-affiliated with a club. It is not an event put on by Roadie Cruisers or any other club. It is the Rods and Roadies, Inc. That actually is the governing body and the one that puts it on. But we have a lot of volunteers that we, you know, need and appreciate, and they come from all different clubs.
Now, what is the date this year of the Rods and Roadies?
September 13th and 14th.
Okay.
Friday is going to be at the Port of Sayous Law parking lot, and thank you for the port for allowing us to use that parking area. That's going to be registration for the car show and also a free show and shine. So if anybody wants to bring their car and show it off, that's the time to do it. We're going to have a live DJ there with some wonderful music. Hopefully we'll have some vendors at that event. And then Saturday, I keep wanting to say Sunday, but Saturday we'll have the actual car show down on Bay Street, Maple Street, Noble, Laurel, down to that area, and we're going to combine it with the awards ceremony and then finish it off with a car cruise.
Now, what other ways has Rods and Roadies changed with the pulling away from the Chamber of Commerce? I mean, other than becoming a 501c3, is there any other changes that have happened because of that or instilled you to make changes because of that?
we're now allowed or we're able to reach out to the entire city of Florence, whether they were a chamber member or not. Now we can reach out to them for sponsorship and help. And then we could also promote them as well. That's changed. Otherwise, we want to be a little more friendly this year, family friendly this year, to have kids involved in the car show. As a matter of fact, one of the awards that we're looking at this year is going to be the Kids' Choice Award. So we're going to allow the kids to get out there and vote for their favorite car.
How difficult is it? Obviously, the classic car generation is a little bit older generation. How hard is it to get younger folks involved in the classic car movement?
It is difficult. In fact, the industry, I was in the industry for years, the manufacturers, and that's one of the key things is that the price of some of these old cars from the 30s, 40s, and 50s is astronomical. And for a young kid to get in, it's difficult. However, there are a lot of young guys out there, and girls, they're still involved in it, and they, you know, they're working their way up. You know, it may not be the top-of-the-line beautiful car, but they're working toward it. And then, of course, a lot of the kids now are into the tuners and the import cars, and that's a whole another market. For our particular show, we still, you know, we're looking at the pre-76 cars, primarily American-made. You know, we have expanded it this year. We're including rat rods, which, for those that don't know, these are well-engineered. In fact, some of them are pretty spectacular, but they're made to look like they're about to fall apart. They may be rusty. They may be painted to look rusty. But some of the engineering is just phenomenal on these cars, very imaginative. And so we have opened up a whole category this year to bring some of those cars in.
Well, let's just talk generic now. We'll put aside all the business stuff and everything. You know, in each of your opinion, because I have my own opinion of what makes a classic car a classic. Because, you know, like you said, you're pre-76. And I would have to say, I think that probably the most classic car cutoff to me would be the 1978 Chevrolet Monte Carlo, which I thought was like the last with the T-top and the pointy front end. To me, that was the last of what I would consider the classic cars before they became like everything looked the same. What do you guys, how do you feel about that?
There's a lot of truth to that, unfortunately. To this day, I can look at a new car going down the street. Half the time, I don't know who made it. You can't tell just by glancing at it anymore. We're sticking pretty much to that era. There was a time when it was mid-60s was the cutoff. And over the years, even like the National Street Rod Association, they have pushed back now. From what I've heard, it's generally if a car is 30 years old or older now, it's kind of a moving scale.
Right, Everybody knows. I mean, classic cars, you don't look at 1980s, you know, Cutlass and go, or 1982 Cutlass and go, what's a classic car?
No.
You know, you don't. In fact, I look at things like the 1973 Grand Prix, which was just a beautiful body style, just kind of, you know, and even the Monte Carlos of those years. But then again, you had the Ford Mustangs in the 70s that kind of went to pot. So, I mean, it's like it's really, right. You know, how do you choose, you know?
Well, I think that, you know, for a period of time, the oil and the fuel prices really played havoc with the car industry, the motor, you know, scene. Then they had to scale back and quit making muscle cars. And now they had to go to economic cars. And then they came back and tried to get back in the muscle car scene again. But then they started using more plastics and things like that. So that kind of, negated the fine lines of the classics we call classics.
Well, you just think of a Mopar with a 1,000 horsepower Hennessy conversion in it. And you're like, whoa, you know, I mean, it's got the muscle, but that doesn't necessarily mean it has the class.
That's true. You know, you can take a newer Mopar and yes, you've got a nice ride, but it doesn't put it in the classic stage. Mm-hmm. You know, even nowadays, and the classics have even gone from just your two-door hardtop sedans or whatever to a four-door station wagon nowadays.
Oh, I know a guy who's nuts about station wagons. I mean, almost every station wagon ever made, he's got three or four of them right now, you know, from the Country Squire to the 80s Oldsmobile, you know, just, and he just loves them, and I don't get it. And he's, honestly, the guy's kind of nuts. He's even got K cars in his collection. Which, you know, I mean, who does?
I was the same
That's
way.
Like having a Yugo. Yeah.
I had a 56 four-door wagon. I love that car. Yeah.
But a 56 four-door wagon.
Chevy,
I mean, you know.
56 Chevy, though, you got the classic grill, the lines, and everything. But, you know, guys sometimes, you know, they look down on that even because, you know, there's that whole thing like any other collectible group.
We had a 55 Nomad wagon that my dad bought for $500, and I wish we still had that car today.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
That's one of my cars on my bucket list, but I don't think I'll make that one.
Well, you know, you could always find a barn find or something, you know, that nobody knows is in there.
Good luck.
Yeah. So, you know, again, favorite all-time classic car for you, Gary?
For me, my first car was a 66 Chevelle Malibu. I picked that up, I think, for $250 and enjoyed the heck out of that. And then I got married. I went over to Germany. And then I gave it to my wife. She sold it for enough money to get some suitcases so she can go over to Germany. And then I heard that the car blew up the same day she sold it.
Well, she got the money first, though.
She got the money first,
okay,
yeah. So anyway.
Somebody blew it up. Like, I mean, exactly. It was what they were doing. They were running it.
I don't know what they were doing. I was in Germany. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, that was for the longest time I wanted to get back to it. And that last year I did. I bought another 66 Chevelle SS this time, and I think that's going to be my last one. I just love the car.
Ross, what about you?
Actually, my favorite one that I've ever owned is my 68 Cougar, Mercury Cougar, and we tunnel rammed it and built the engine and drag raced it and just had a ball with that thing. Of course, I have my truck now, which is kind of a one of a kind, I thoroughly enjoy that thing. I don't take it out that often, but you know, I think my all-time favorite, I have a soft spot for a 56 Chevy or a 56 Ford. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's something about the grills on them or what.
But. I had, when I was a teenager, my dad had a restaurant, and we had people that came in restaurants all the time and friends of ours. And there was this one lady named Ruthie, and she had a daughter, and the daughter had an XR7 1969 Cougar, all power windows, white leather interior, teal with the vinyl roof on top. And she's like, and I was like looking for something to drive. She goes, well, she goes, this has been sitting in my yard for 14 years, you know. And she goes, I don't know, you know, what to do with it. And I was like, okay, so I'll come by and look at it. And she said, well, look, if you can get it running, you can drive it. So I went in there. I got a new battery, changed the oil, you know, lubricated everything I could find to lubricate. I cranked that baby up, and it fired. 351 Cleveland was in that thing. I can't tell you how many motor mounts I replaced in the first 6 months I was driving it. But I drove that thing for a little over a year just as a loaner. And it was like, that's my favorite car of all time. Even though the windows, once they went down, they didn't come back up.
I remember my Chevelle, my Malibu, it had a seat, the passenger seat wasn't securely anchored to the floor.
Yeah.
So whenever you'd take off, my passenger would always end up in the back seat. I don't know why, but
that could be good though, you know, if you're a young man and you're you know, courting a lady then. Well, guys, thank you so much. Rods and Roadies coming up in September. And again, you guys are now a nonprofit, so you know, anybody who wants to support can look you guys up and help out with that.
Yeah, we do have four levels of sponsorship, so that would be nice if we can get some sponsors out there.
All right. Sounds good. Gary Cargill, Ross Conert.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for
being
here.
Thanks very much, George.